Hello, friends. Welcome to this week's Gentle Rambler program. Today we have another guest I'm very excited about. He's also a host of his very own show from across the pond in the United Kingdom. And a bit like what we do here, he focuses on world issues, current events, and politics. So I have a few questions for him, but we're also going to do the US-UK news story contrast, where the lefty and myself each choose a relevant news story from our side of the Atlantic. We did this several months ago with one Dave Middleton. Despite finding out what a condescending phony he is, it was a pretty cool segment. So, now let me introduce the host of the Lefty Podcast. His name is Isaac. And how's it going today, comrade?
It's going good, comrade. How's things in the States?
Oh, man, they're just as bad as ever. Just as bad as ever. Yes, sirree. So, I just get right in here. So, yeah, you're an independent podcaster. And are you a writer as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
I used to write for Critical Mass, like you did.
Oh, right. That's what we're going to get to. So we're always looking to collaborate with different sites, different people. And the people out there, they know what went down with me in that site, Critical Mass, and this show, actually. But so if you want to just give us a really quick rundown of what happened there.
Yeah, sure. So I was writing for Critical Mass from about August when it started through to about early December, late November time. I had written a number of articles that were getting routinely rejected. It wasn't a big thing that went down between the editor and I. Some of my articles just started getting rejected, and I thought I'd be better going off independently and writing my own stuff because the stuff that I write is not very sort of Corbynista. I come from a Marxist perspective. I'm a Marxist, and I like to write things from a class conscious perspective rather than a sort of class collaborationist perspective.
Oh yeah, so basically they were almost censoring your writing, is what you're saying, in a sense.
Yeah, I wrote two articles. One was on my relationship with the Catholic Church, and whether religion can be used as a source for good in the world. And I later recorded that article actually as a podcast and released it on Christmas Eve. That was quite nice. I had an interview with former Labour MP Chris Williamson, and that got rejected, but I later published the interview on my podcast, so everything was fine in the end. I just for a while I had to hold off some publishing.
Okay, yeah, so I mean, I actually wrote one article for them. You mentioned a little bit about Jeremy Corbyn. I would like to ask you a bit about British politics. Mainly Mr. Corbyn, who is widely he's widely liked by my British listeners, or the majority of them anyway. What are his chances of ever being truly relevant again, you know, amongst the whole British politics?
Yeah, sure. So before we start on Corbyn, I'm just going to make something clear. I was a member of the Labour Party whilst Jeremy Corbyn was the leader, like most leftists were, and then I left about in October time, so around this time I stopped writing for Critical Mass, and I left because I was very unhappy with the direction that the party was travelling in, and Keir Starmer, the leader. Jeremy Corbyn, for me, was, for the first few years, he was an inspiration. He was somebody who I looked up to, and I thought, that man is going to be Prime Minister, and he's going to do a tremendous job. Over time, that started to begin to fade. I changed my position slightly on Brexit because it was a big divisive issue, and Jeremy Corbyn was originally at my stance that we have to get on with Brexit, we have to do it, whereas later on he turned into the sort of second referendum Remainy person, and Labour lost the 2019 election quite tragically around Christmas time in 2019, and losing big seats around where I am in the Midlands and the north of England. So Jeremy Corbyn has sort of been cast into the political wilderness for a good few years now, since 2019, and he's now a sort of walking voice in the wilderness. He set up the Corbyn Peace and the Peace and Justice Foundation. I haven't seen much coming from them. I am a member, and I'm subscribed to their mailing list, and I do some events with them in my city of Leicester, but otherwise not much goes on between them and I. I don't think Jeremy Corbyn's going to make a return. I know I'm not allowed to say certain things because of my party, the Breakthrough Party, and their relationship with other parties, but I know some things are in the works, And over time, we will begin to see them do some more stuff. And it's going to be exciting. But I don't think Jeremy Corbyn's ever going to become a prominent figure again. I think we've got a new generation now who want to get involved.
Sure, sure. I actually had a member of the Breakthrough Party, a fellow named Edward Poole, and I dig the Breakthrough Party. I really like their, you know, their core tenets and everything that they stand for. So, yeah, I wish we had something like a party like that in the United States. That you know, especially with the youth movement and everything. I think that's really important. And you mentioned Brexit. Now, were you for the referendum for Brexit, or how do you stand on that, real quick?
Okay, so this was interesting, my relationship with Brexit. So in 2014, I think it's best to start the story of Brexit in about 2014, when UKIP, a sort of populist party, won the most seats of any British candidate in the European Parliament election, mostly in Labour's heartlands in the Midlands and the North. The United Kingdom Independence Party, UKIP, was led by Nigel Farage, who you know, got a big support from in the States. Now, there is an untold story of Brexit of many socialists throughout the generations. Tony Benn was Jeremy Corbyn's mentor, and he strongly supported Brexit while he was still alive, as did Barbara Castle, big Labour ministers today. But there are socialist reasons for supporting Brexit. I never supported Brexit per se. In the 2016 referendum, I was sort of, I couldn't care less really. I wasn't very involved in politics, but over time I became more Remainery. And then around the time, just before the 2019 election, I completely realised the error of my ways and I slipped, because I realised that on the doorstep, when we're knocking on doors as Labour, people don't like our stance. We can't have a second referendum because we're betraying a democratic vote. And if we're democratic socialists, like I was at the time, then there's not much democracy going into it. So Brexit, I now see the merits of Brexit. I think it was probably a good thing that we voted to leave. However, not for the reasons that the xenophobes do, like Nigel Farage. I'm a socialist, and I support Brexit because I support being free from neoliberal restraints and globalized capitalism.
Very good, very good. I like that stance on that, my friend. So one quick question I wanted to ask, especially a podcaster and a good podcaster, how do you come to your decision of, like, how did you come to the decision of having your own chat show? How do you prepare for your programs? And could you think of maybe one or two historical people of any period you'd like to have an interview with? It's a fun question, right?
Yeah, the history question is brilliant. I'll start at the very beginning, a very good place to start, if Julie Andrews is to be believed. I started The Lefty in February 2021, after I've been thinking about it since about December 2020, because of the Capitol Hill riots and the events surrounding that. And I wanted to ask myself, how can people get themselves into a position where they are willing to do anything for a cause, like I was for Corbyn? Why do they do these things? And that was always the question that sort of driven The Lefty and what we do. There's been a sort of political transformation of mine while I've been inside. I've been writing, I've been doing The Lefty podcast. And that sort of been, I started as a sort of democratic socialist of the Corbyn tradition, and I'm a Marxist now. So things have changed quite substantially over recent years. And I prepare by, I write up questions, I write up 10 questions, I give people an introduction. I don't have guests on every week, but most weeks I have a guest on. And if I don't have a guest on, I will write two sort of articles that I will just speak through, and I'll try and make them as entertaining as I can. Two historical guests I'd like to have on. Now, that's an interesting question. Yeah. I haven't heard much thoughts. I'd say first things first, I'd like to have on, I'd very much like to have on Vladimir Lenin.
Nice.
Because I feel like you get some great stories out of him, and Lenin was an all-encompassing figure who wrote and said many great things. Another figure I'd like to have on would probably be Oliver Cromwell.
Oliver Cromwell, I like it. Cool, cool.
I'm an anti-monarchist. I don't believe in having a monarchy.
Sure.
And so I can respect him for that. But he did so many terrible things, especially in Ireland. So whether history sees him as a terrorist, an evil man, or a great Republican, we're yet to find out in English history, even though it happened 400 years ago.
Right.
So I'd like to have Oliver Cromwell on to talk to him.
Cool. I actually would pick Malcolm X myself. So anyway, I wanted to get to this part of the program. It's we're going to call it the News Contrast, right? And this is where my guest, being you, and I, we're going to focus on one news story, one from here in the United States, which I've chosen, and my guest, Mr. Isaac here from the United Kingdom. If you would, my friend, what have you got over there from across the pond on the old news story?
Yeah, so I've got probably the biggest news story of the last few weeks in the UK. Actually, there's been two very big news stories, but I'm going to focus on one of them. The other being Boris Johnson's sort of demise in the polls around the garden parties. But the other big news story I'm going to focus on is the honours list and the Queen knighting Sir Anthony Charles Lyndon Blair, known to the world as Tony Blair, giving him the highest order in the land, the Garter, making him a Garter Knight, which is the top of the top of the British honour system. He will be entrenched forever in the British aristocracy. Tony Blair, for those, I suppose everyone knows who Tony Blair and George Bush are, but just a brief rundown. I used to be in the same party as Tony Blair. I used to be in the Labour Party. Not at the time. I mean, I was born under Tony Blair, so it sort of gives you a guess of how old I am. You know, Tony Blair is a figure who has sort of escaped history because he is still alive and he's still doing rare interventions, even though they happen every day. But he did a lot of things in the UK and forever changed British history through his reforms of the economy, making it towards a slightly more meritocratic but still market-focused economy. His surveillance systems, CCTV, is now widely used in the UK and tracking as a result of Tony Blair's actions. His progressive social policies, which most people would say are a good thing, but they did have more reactionary elements within them. For example, the Sure Start system and the minimum wage. However, everyone remembers Tony Blair for the one thing which we all despise him for, and that is the war in Iraq,
yes.
The war on terror. So Tony Blair, of course, launched the war in Iraq alongside George Bush. And in the UK today, Blair is reviled amongst most people, left and right. For example, I recently saw a prominent Labour MP like Richard Burlian or Jeremy Corbyn come out, not a Labour MP anymore, but an MP nonetheless, like Jeremy Corbyn come out and profess that they don't support Blair receiving his knighthood. But then you see someone on the right of the political spectrum, like Farage or Martin Dubné, who is the leader of the I think it's the Reform Party, the Reclaim Party, which is a sort of right populist party. They all oppose Blair's knighthood. The only people who do support them is the centrist liberal classes. So a petition was launched. So the Queen announced that Blair was getting his knighthood on New Year's Eve. A petition was launched on New Year's Day to resist this. I signed it on the 2nd of January, so the day after New Year's Day, and I spread it. And this petition received over 1 million signatures. So this is 2% of the British population who have signed this. So it doesn't seem like a lot, but it's 1 in every 30 houses have signed this. Uh-huh. By contrast, in the Iraq war, most estimates say that about 1 million people died. And on February 15, 2003, about 2 million people marched on the streets of London against the war in Iraq, including many people who I know personally and professionally. And so So Blair is reviled by most of the political spectrum. So there's been huge debate over the last few weeks about whether Blair should receive knighthood and if it's right to announce something and then take it back.
Right.
So the Queen has put her cards on the table and said, that, you know, it's important for him to get it. He's the former Prime Minister. He was the longest serving Prime Minister of the 21st century. He was in charge for 10 years, from 1997 to 2010. And I think it's quite sad, actually, because the overarching story of Tony Blair and the New Labour project was one of hope to tragedy. What do I mean by that? I mean that in 1994, when Blair became the Labour leader and started modernising and reforming and centralising the party, bourgeoisification, if you're going to use that term.
Sure.
It was a system of hope. Millions of people voted for Blair. He was popular. The Labour Party was popular. Whereas by 2007, when he left, he was one of the most hated men in the world, and in Britain too, because of his stance over the war in Iraq. 53% of people. I know in the US, the majority supported the war. In the UK, the majority completely opposed it. I think it was like 50, 55% of people opposed the war in Iraq. So now this week there's widespread anger and contempt over Blair's knighthood. So that's the story I wanted to spread this week.
Thank you for that, my friend. Yeah, so I mean, when I heard that, I was a bit shocked. Now, you know, when I was at that age, I didn't even, because when I started looking into politics, it was right around when the war started. So, you know, I wasn't really in, you know, too in deep into the British or European politics. And I didn't even realize Tony Blair was what you'd like call a Labour person or, you know, of that type, you know, basically what you would call a Democrat here in the United States. I just thought he was a warmonger, just like Bush. And then it comes to find out that, you know, he was part of the Labour Party. So he was really basically a traitor in that sense, you know, basically. And as he said, go ahead.
I was going to say, Robert, that the Labour Party works a bit differently to the Democrats.
Okay.
Because it was founded in 1900 to be a sort of reformist but still socialist party. The Democrats were never a socialist party.
No, never.
At the start, they were the party of slavery. And
yes,
then over time, they turned into a liberal party. Whereas in the UK, because of the first-past-the-post voting system, you've got about four camps of people inside the Labour Party. You've got the Blairites, the Brownites, the soft left Milibandites and the Corbynistas. I was of the Corbynista faction when I was in the party. That goes from right to left. And so Tony Blair is reviled by most Labour members.
Right.
However, because he still belongs in the Labour Party, because the Labour Party is a reformist party and now completely committed to imperialism and starting wars abroad. And I'm personally very glad that I left and most Corbynistas left when they did.
Sure. Definitely. So anyway, so I'm going to get to my New York, American news story. It's on Congressman Matt Gaetz. I don't know if you're aware of him, but he's back in the news cycles for his potentially creepy and extremely illegal actions and sex trafficking charges. I actually have an NBC news site up here. Republican Matt Gaetz, ex-girlfriend, testified before a federal grand jury Wednesday after reportedly being in talks with prosecutors about an immunity deal. Under a possible deal, she would be expected to receive immunity from potential prosecution for allegedly obstructing justice in return for her testimony. It's important to stress that Gaetz's girlfriend, we don't know what information she provided as part of the FBI reported investigation into the congressman's for alleged crimes, including sex trafficking of a 17-year-old. It's also important to stress that Matt Gaetz hasn't been charged with any crimes and any wrongdoings yet. There are also two reasons why it's less appealing for the government to try to persuade a target's wife to cooperate. So basically, they're going after Gaetz's wife to try to cooperate. This story's been going on for quite some time here in the United States. Matt Gaetz is basically, he's a congressman, so he's a low-ranking, member of Congress. But he has been in the news for a lot of other reasons. He was a big Trump supporter. He did a few other things, like he went to crazy prison break he tried to do for the fellas that were tried to break into the Capitol building. Him and Marjorie Taylor Greene there, they went over there and they tried to actually get them out of jail. And you know, when I was in jail, if those two nuts came to try to get me out of jail, I would probably try to stay away for a bail hearing. But anyway, so keep going on this. Historically, American society has placed a value on certain relationships by protecting the participants from being compelled to testify in court. Only a very exclusive set of relationships can claim these privileges in federal court. Clergy, penitent, attorney-client privileges, psychotherapist, patient, and spouses. There are exactly zero girlfriend testimonial privileges. So Matt Gaetz is definitely in a lot of trouble. This has been going on for, like I said, a couple of years now. We did discuss it way back on this show. And so, you know, you got cretins like that in your... within your government, making big decisions. And you wonder, you know, what is going on in society where a guy like Matt Gaetz, and is this, you know, this came out, I want to say 6 to 10 months ago that this guy was involved with underage children, you know, similar to the Jeffrey Epstein affair, you know, similar to that. And for him to still be in there, potentially making, helping people make, laws, it's outrageous. So anyway, that's my story, Matt Gaetz. We'll also talk about him probably again in another show later on. But so anyway, Isaacs, I really want to thank you for coming on the show this week.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you're a very intelligent guy, and everything else. And I actually, if you're interested, I write for a site named Dangerous Globe. And if you're interested, I may give your give your blog or your editorials a read and see if those guys over there will like it. If you'd be interested, it's a site over in the Netherlands. I don't know if you've heard of it. Yeah, so I don't know if you'd be interested in that. But anyway, so if there's anything now you'd like to, you know, you'd like to promote or anything you'd like to tell the people out there that you're doing currently, anything you'd like to promote, now the time to do so.
Sure. Shameless self-plug. the Electric Podcast is available on Spotify, Google Podcasts, I think Apple Podcasts now, and it's distributed by Anchor. I'd also like to say that I host La Campagna, which is a weekly British socialist deep dive into the French presidential election with my good friend Ollie Mosley. That's a great show. I write stuff very occasionally. I do have a blog which is down. You can check that out. I can send you the link.
Sure.
And yeah, that's basically all there is. I'm a member of the Breakthrough Party and I'm on Breakthrough's National Executive Committee.
Great. Yeah, I love the Breakthrough Party. I really like their your guys' stances on a lot of things. You know, free energy, free broadband internet. There's a lot of other things. I spoke about it for a good few minutes a couple episodes back. So I really dig the Breakthrough Party, and I really dig this interview. I think I really enjoyed it. I learned some about British politics, which is always something that I'm interested in. So thank you, Isaac. Thank you for coming on, and I'll be talking to you on the Twitter machine, okay?
Thanks, Rob.
All right, thank you. All right, so that was episode 36 of The Gentle Rambler. That was the Lefty Podcast host, Isaac Warren, and I'm The Gentle Rambler, and I'm signing off.